Welcome to the Enneagram Global Summit, where top experts are sharing key insights that illuminate the 9 essential pathways to your true nature. Share this event with your friends and family, and come join us on Facebook at the Shift Network. And now your host, Jessica Dibb, founder of the Inspiration Consciousness School.
Welcome to the Enneagram Global Summit, 9 Essential Pathways for Transformation. Our session is called We Know, an exploration into how types 5, 6, and 7 arise from the spacious capacity of the head center. Our faculty is Julie Harris and Peter O'Hanrahan. Julie is a certified Riso Hudson Enneagram teacher and innovator in transmitting the wisdom of the Enneagram through powerful visuals. She is the founder of Riverbend Coaching, helping big picture thinkers bring their ideas from concept to contribution, and the co-founder of New York Enneagram, teaching in-person classes in New York City and live webinars for students around the world. Peter has been teaching the Enneagram since 1981, and for the past 20 years has worked as a trainer for the Narrative Enneagram School, founded by Helen Palmer and Dr. David Daniels. In addition to the narrative trainings, he teaches workshops on the embodied Enneagram and the instinctual subtypes in the U.S., in China, and in Europe. Julie and Peter, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So this is our first day of the summit, and this is our fourth session. We've had an introduction session, and then we've heard from the body about the body types and then the heart center, and now we are coming to the head center. So I'm really grateful that both of you who are so committed to teaching are willing to share your experience and your knowledge and your inquiries into the head center. And I'd like to start with you, Julie. Why don't you share what you feel are the capacities of the head center, the functioning and dynamics of it?
Sure. That'd be great. You know, it's really interesting because a lot of times when we're thinking about our head and thinking about thinking, we're considering it like a doing, like it's something where we're kind of like cranking all this information through our minds. And the way I like to teach about the head center is that it is this wide open space. The metaphor I like to use is that of the night sky. So it's this beautiful wide open space, and it's a sky full of stars. And the head center is the space, that beautiful indigo space, and the stars are these bits of phenomena that are floating by, all the smells and sounds, the people, the buildings, the animals, everything that comes into our lives. And when we are open to this wide space, we have this quality of relaxed orientation or knowing that where things just show up, right? Like when you're looking at the night sky, you see the stars twinkling in and out, and it's like bits of information are popping for you, and you can see where they're going. You can see where you might want to focus in on a piece of information. You can see how all the information fits together, how it's literally, right, like sailors use the sky for navigation. And so when you've got your mind open and you're watching, you can like literally see how the information all fits together, and you can navigate through it. And you can also see tremendous possibilities, right? And so like the darker and wider the sky is, the more possibilities, the more stars start to pop up. And so there's this amazing quality when we're really present in our head center of the world being a place of wonder and excitement and a place of discovery and of wanting to just be in a sense of reverence and openness towards what we can know.
Thank you so much for that. And Peter, I'd love to hear your description of the dynamic and function and the capacity of the head center.
Yeah. Well, Julie, thanks for that wonderful metaphor. I appreciate that. You know, for the head types, as the listeners probably have heard already, we all have a head center, a heart center, and a body center. But one of those is really in the lead. And it's true for our personality type. It's also true for, you know, kind of the deeper character structure or organization inside of us. And so we say that types 5, 6, and 7, they want to understand things in the mind. It's not that the rest of us don't want to do that, but it's really a priority, even a need for the head types, to be able to understand things intellectually. And so one of the things I really appreciate about the head types is that their rigor in thinking things through, their perception, their knowledge, you know, the way they can observe and connect things intellectually, and really the seeing function is very well developed in the head types. And at the same time, overthinking can be a problem. So there's both the gift and the challenge in each of the center groups. And so for the 5, 6, and 7, it's hard to turn thinking off because that's such a strong function in them. So in the big view, the path of growth for the head types is to develop contact and access to the heart center and the body center. And, of course, they can do that, and they can do that very well. But there is a challenge because attention, energy and attention seems to really go up into the head center more than the other centers naturally. I say that the head types really kind of reflect both a wonderful development in our culture and also a particular challenge, which is the development of the mental ego. And, you know, it's just been such a big and important process over the centuries for the human race to develop more of a consciousness in the mind and an awareness in the mind. And then the problem or the difficulty is that there can be a separation from the life of the body. And so it's kind of like the mental ego is detached from the ground of being or the ground of nature. And so there's the paradox. You know, the thinking function is very strong. It comes with particular abilities and talents. And at the same time, it can be too much. You know, like with all the Enneagram types, our strengths, when we overuse them, can also turn into problems for us.
Thank you. So it's wonderful now if we can get very specific about each of the types in the head center, 5, 6, and 7. So why don't we start with type 5 and to talk about that journey of growth in each of the types. Peter, why don't you start with type 5?
Well, type 5s are the observers or the scholars, the investigators in some way, kind of the deep dive into knowledge. And so they have this tremendous ability to take something intellectually and go all the way down to the depths of it. And at the same time, they're able to put that in the context of systems. So they're great systems thinkers. My understanding with Type 5 is that their number one goal, well, there are several goals, really, but they want to acquire knowledge and expertise. And sometimes we're fortunate enough they'll share their knowledge with us, but just to have the knowledge itself is a big goal for Type 5. Knowledge is good for kind of its innate qualities. It's also a way to be able to function in a world that seems to be overwhelming at times. Fives have a very sensitive nervous system. All the types have a particular temperament or a basis in neurobiology. And fives really have a very sensitive nervous system. And so it's very common that they can end up feeling overwhelmed or overstimulated by too much of whatever, too much noise, too much contact, too much activity. And so they really seek to take care of themselves by going into their private space. And, of course, the issue for fives is how much of that privacy is healthy and important to kind of go into the private space and recreate oneself and digest experience, and when there might be a problem with kind of getting stuck and being withdrawn. And so negotiating that is really important, you know, for fives. I think all fives can identify with this. You know, it's like, yes, we need to respect that fives need their time alone and their privacy. Autonomy, self-sufficiency is important. But we also want to support the fives in our lives in returning to contact and kind of navigating that coming and going from being with us to being in their own space. One of the challenges for the head types, 5, 6, and 7, we can certainly see this with type 5, is that the defenses of the type use the lead center. It's like where we're strongest, that's going to be used by our defense system. And so the head types, their primary defense is just to kind of detach, go up into the head, get away from difficult feelings or overwhelm in the body. And so for type 5s, it's a challenge to work with the upward displacement, to kind of appreciate the strength and the value of the mind and the intellect, but also to be able to get energy and attention back to the heart center and the body center. And of course, many fives do this. I mean, they do this as part of their path of growth and path of relationship. The habit of attention, you know, it's like seeking knowledge, seeking information, wanting to know things very deeply. There are a few fives that go broad and have interest in a lot of different subjects, but most of the fives that I've come across in my 40 years with the Enneagram, they choose specific areas. You know, they want to one area, several areas that they want to really go and get the whole system, the whole frame, and all the knowledge that they can. In terms of the heart center, every type has an emotional habit. And so for five, this is a version of fear, which creates a feeling inside of, I need to hold back or hold on to my resources. There's a sensitivity to intrusion or depletion by over-participation or over-connecting with people. And so there's a contraction in the emotional center where, I have to hold on to what I have. But the higher emotion, the capacity for higher emotion is a quality of generosity, you know, so that when fives are willing to share their resources of time and attention and really be there for us, it has a really wonderful quality and a very big impact.
Thank you so much for that journey, Peter. And so, Julie, it's going to be very interesting to hear you talk about the path of growth for the type 5.
Sure. Well, you know, I share a lot of the insights that Peter has. You know, the healthy 5 has one of their essential qualities, this quality of illumination. It's like that lighting up of the night sky. And through that illumination, it does usually lead them to find something to focus on, to discern something that really captures their attention and is calling their interest and their curiosity. Healthy fives have what's called beginner's mind, right? If you think of a child, and they're like, "What's that? Why?" and they keep asking those questions, those very basic questions. They don't assume a prior state of knowing. And so I think in the five, we see that this ability to discover knowledge in a really robust way, like through the senses. I have this great quote from Albert Einstein, who is a five, and he says, you know, my primary method of perceiving is muscular and visual. And another quote from Thomas Edison saying, great ideas originate in the muscles. So I think healthy fives, they're really in touch, they're in contact with their senses, with their heart, and they want to explore things. As Peter said, they want to go down to the depths. They want to keep asking those simple but really penetrating questions that are going to get to the bottom of something. And when they're able to do that, that quality of seeing becomes vision. It's like all of a sudden when I'm really present to exactly what's here, something emerges that I haven't seen before. And so healthy fives are profoundly visionary individuals. They sort of shine that intense penetrating beam and ask those questions and create all sorts of new and exciting things in the world. And so you could imagine that if I'm a five and this is the mode that feels most like home to me, if I feel like I'm cut off from that or it's not available to me anymore, that's a very scary thing. And as Peter was saying, fear is the basic emotion that arises in all of the head types when they are not connected to their true selves. Each type goes from having an inspired insight in a certain way to distracting themselves in a fearful manner. And so for the five, when they feel disconnected to this quality of illumination, then there is this attempt, as Peter says, to collect information, to, instead of discovering things freshly, to kind of inhale all of the resources. You know, I'm gonna listen to every TED Talk. I'm going to read all the books. I'm going to become an expert in a particular area. And it almost becomes an excessive narrowness and obsessiveness about something in attempt to feel like I know something, because I've lost that, the access to that quality of knowing. And so my effort becomes on acquisition rather than discovery. And one of the things that the five shows us is that in the healthy state, you know, new knowledge is just new phenomena, new knowledge is arising all the time, and we don't have to hold on to it, right? Peter mentioned that what happens in the heart, which this quality of avarice in the heart, and in the mind is a quality called retention. The fixation is retention. I have to pull in all this knowledge through my mind and hold on to it, because I don't trust that things will just keep arising and I can be present to see them and to notice them. I withdraw all my contact from my body and from my heart, and I go into my head and into this mode of conceptualizing things. So it's this move from things being relaxed and illuminated to thinking that I have to conceptualize and crunch things through my mind so that I can understand what's real. And you know, we'll see for all of these types, and really for all Enneagram types, that there's a quality of relaxation in our bodies that we can cultivate that allows these essential flavors to come back to us and allows us to disidentify from some of the habits of our personality that are really trying to chase the qualities that really feel most like ourselves, but that we can't really get access to when we're not in this relaxed and present state.
So we can move to type six now and get another flavor of expression and functioning from the head center. And Julie, why don't we just continue right on with you?
Sure. So one of the essential qualities of type six is awakeness. And so if I'm awake as a six, I am present to all of these phenomena. And when I'm relaxed with it, I discover that life is kind of self-organizing. So I had a six kind of experience where I was walking in Colorado in a landscape that was pretty deserty and homogenous, and it was really difficult to discern where the trail was. But, you know, I found if I really stayed awake and present, all of a sudden I began to see, oh, the trail goes this way, the trail goes that way. And so for the six, who is awake to everything, there is this way of intelligently orienting, that the world is intelligent and I can orient to it in an intelligent way. And so the path appears, and it's almost like the awakeness is awake to itself. Like there's just this real appreciation for how the consciousness of the universe flows and how I can participate and how everyone can participate in that. And when I lose contact with that as a six, I am, when I'm awake, I'm still noticing so many things. Like the sixes, you'll see, notice everything. Right, like it's they're alert to noises, they're alert to visual things, they're noticing everything. But if I've lost connection with my essential self, there's not that sense of intelligence and organization, and so I don't know which of these paths to follow. I'm noticing all these different things, and they all sort of have an appeal, and I've lost my sense of inner guidance and orientation about how I might respond to what I'm noticing. And so this leads to a sense of hypervigilance in the six. Since I'm not really sure where the guidance is coming from, I have to kind of stay really alert in a more tense way. It's very anxiety producing. It's almost like there's too much to take in. The sixth personality is trying to do this job of organizing the universe, and it's not possible from that place. They start to look for guidance outside of themselves. They don't trust their own innate capabilities, and they think, well, maybe this person knows actually how this thing works, or maybe that person knows, or maybe I need to keep like tabs on five people because like they'll all kind of know, and thinking that somebody knows better than I do, sort of outsourcing my innate sense of guidance and organization, and trying to get it from someone else. And so again, the path of growth for the six is very much around the quality of relaxation. You know, Peter talked about the nervous system of the five being very sensitive because it's a withdrawn type, and there's a kind of a lot of phenomena coming in and out. Well, you know, for six, that they have this quality of alertness, like their nervous system is really primed to be very alert to things. And when you're alert with relaxation, you know exactly what to do in any situation. And when you're alert with tension, it is very anxiety-producing and confusing and feels difficult to orient to the world.
Thank you for that, Julie. Peter, how about you with the type six?
Well, gosh, there's so much to say. And Julie, being a type six, of course, knows this from the inside out, and that's always the most accurate. I would say sixes are complicated. You know, and I think one of the names we use indicates that. We say in the narrative school, we say the loyal skeptic. And on the one hand, they're very loyal. Once they've invested themselves into a project, a team, a relationship, a cause, an intellectual pursuit, whatever it is, they will really persevere. And they're not daunted by, problems or things that go wrong. It's like they can engage with all that and kind of stay the course. And on the other hand, they're skeptic. They're skeptical. This is just the questioning mind, sometimes the doubting mind. So it's always like, well, why are we doing this? And how come you did it that way? And what are we going to do over here? And, what is this thing about the Enneagram? And why is that important? And so, and yet in their questioning, they develop things. They take things deeper. So whatever it is, whether it's in a relationship or working with an idea or the Enneagram system, it's like they don't just take the surface information or the surface value or what people even say on the surface. They want to go underneath the surface, like what's really happening here, and let's check this out further and work it, you know, from both sides. My experience with sixes is that they can be very dependable and very loyal. Sometimes they're, let me just say that in terms of their temperament or their neurobiology, and Julie referred to this, is they have the most sensitive alarm system in the body of all the types, generally speaking. We all have an alarm system that alerts us to danger, and then we have a reaction of fight, flight, or freeze. But for sixes, their alarm system is the most sensitive of all. And of course, this has tremendous value for protecting and safeguarding and creating security for themselves and the people that they care about. But it can create problems, especially in the modern world when there's so much going on all the time, that there can be a certain amount of alarm happening in the body chronically. So it's really important for sixes to work on kind of resetting back down to zero, you know, back to being able to kind of relax into the body and not be walking around being somewhat alarmed all the time. And this speaks to their emotional issue with fear. Of course, there's sixes really make the point that we can't always tell from people's outside behavior what their type is. It's really kind of more of an inside view, because some sixes are cautious. You know, they want to gather information. They want to talk to people, find out what other people think. They engage our sympathy. They may hesitate from going into action. And then on the other side of this continuum, really, there is a kind of a counter fear with kind of assertion and strength. You know, well, we'll just jump in and do it. And in that way, they can look a lot like type 8. So sixes, you know, can be on one side or the other of this continuum and look very different in their external behavior. Some hold back and hesitate, want to think it through, and others want to just jump in and get it done. But most sixes seem to have elements of both, depending on the situation. And, of course, their higher emotional capacity, or the virtue, is called courage, which is to be able to feel the fear and go forward in any event. Really appreciate the courage of the sixes in my life. Sixes are also great problem solvers, because their habit of attention goes towards what could go wrong. What are the problems we need to face? How can we create security in a situation? How can we make sure that things are going to work out the way we want them to work out? And so they orient towards problems and then coming up with solutions. So they're great problem solvers and planners and strategists. Again, any strength that's overused can also become a liability, which is sixes can get caught in the negative view of things, like, oh, that's not going to work out, or what about this, what about that, and so to balance that with kind of a positive view, like, yes, things can work out, and there will be problems, and we can hold that in a larger space. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Is that?
Thank you. Yeah, this is really instructive for everybody. So that brings us to type 7, which brings another flavor into the head center. Why don't you start with that, Peter?
Well, type 7, this is the type of the expanded mind. You know, it's like the mind kind of leaps forward into multiple possibilities. Like I want to see all the stars. I want to see all the stars at once. And so where we say that fives generally kind of go deep into a particular area, sevens generally have breadth. And this is not a rule. It doesn't mean that sevens can't go deeply into something. That's not what I'm saying. But that their mind tends to want to gather all the possibilities. And that's also true in terms of how they live, because their major goal in life is to have fun, to enjoy life fully. And so that can be the life of the mind, but it can also be the life of pleasure and wonderful food and drink and conversation, or it could be the life of adventures in the world and so many fun things to engage with. And, of course, sevens have this great capacity to make things fun, one of the many things that we appreciate about them. It just seems to be an inherent, again, in terms of their biology, their temperament, they seem to be able to handle a lot of stimulation, you know, a lot of kind of multifaceted experiences. And again, the strength overused becomes the problem of like the too muchness, like dispersing oneself in too many different directions. And of course, the challenge for sevens is to be able to focus, you know, to enjoy the wide-ranging mind, but also, when necessary, to focus on, okay, I'm going to focus here on this thing, this task, this person, this relationship, at least for a period of time. Say, sevens generally are not in touch with being afraid. I mean, life is good, but underneath that position, there actually is a fear of limitation. Sevens just don't want to be limited. And even that is probably just the top of something deeper. Maybe a fear of deprivation, some kind of craving for more. I don't want to miss out on all that life has to offer. And so to be able to accept limitation at times, limitation in a relationship, even in terms of talking to somebody. I mean, sometimes it's like we can just see that their minds are working overtime. They're already three steps ahead of what we're saying, you know, and to be able to kind of be here now, be in the present moment, to bring oneself back, which is, of course, important for all of the Enneagram types. But sevens really teach us about this, you know, about really stepping into the present moment, you know, and calming the mind. And again, being in touch with the heart center and also the body center.
Thrilling. So, Julie, what would you like to tell us about Type 7?
So I'll echo some of what Peter said, that, you know, a healthy Type 7 sees the world as a joyous riot of possibility. Their minds are really interested in many different seeing many different strands of experience and seeing how we could move forward with those different experiences. And a healthy seven knows that he or she is here to experience things, not for a particular experience. And that's what can get sevens off their essential self is grasping for a particular experience. So, you know, this fear that Peter was mentioning that is quite buried down below, right? For most people, when they see a seven, they would not assume that this is a type that has fear running through them. But this fear is of, you know, being deprived or being in pain, and it leads me to anticipate and kind of jump ahead to, like, maybe this is the experience that's going to be the experience that will kind of keep me satisfied forever. Or maybe this is the experience, or maybe this is the experience. And when they do that, what they're trying to do is look for that guidance in all these different experiences. Right. So if I think I'm here for a particular experience and I can't find that one, then I have to keep trying them all because, you know, maybe the satisfying thing is somewhere out there. That's what keeps my personality spinning as a seven. But when I know that my basics, my orientation to life is to experience, like Peter was saying, you know, to taste amazing food and to travel to amazing places, I can really savor the experience that I'm having. So healthy sevens are able to really fully take in the impression of the experience they're having, and then they know what experiences are really nourishing for them. They will always be alert and oriented towards, like, seeing more possibilities and lots of exciting ways that they could move and get more experiences. But I think as sevens mature, they get much more clear about what experiences really are going to be satisfying. Where is my agile mind really best serving? And I think that really, like, the highest expression of the seven is having the freedom to choose my attitude in any circumstances, to know that my freedom and those possibilities don't depend on a particular set of circumstances, which always seems to be somewhere else, but actually I can be free right here, right now, with the experience that I'm having. And I think when sevens discover that, it just opens up the possibility even further. You know, it's this paradoxical thing of discovering that when I do, that freedom doesn't mean endless choices. Freedom means actually binding myself to something. And then when I choose something, so many possibilities open up inside of there. And it's just a really delightful energy to be around.
Well, this whole session feels delightful to me, very illuminating, every pun intended there. And so I'd love to ask both of you, because you're both so good at the descriptions here, a few deepening questions. So let's start with you, Julie. We've talked about the fact that fear is the predominant emotion of contraction in the head center, and then we've course ended up here with type 7 and the idea of excitement and all of the head types have this nervous system that is wired to be awake, alert, observing of the universe. So what is the relationship between fear and excitement in the head center?
Yeah, it's really interesting that the pathways in our body for fear and excitement are actually the same neurological pathways. And fear and excitement are both physiologically arousing. You know, as Peter was saying, fear arouses us to begin to prepare if there's an actual danger. It sort of makes us more alert and more engaged and more focused so that if there's danger, we can do something about it. And excitement does the same thing if we're able to stay with it. And so when we're present with our excitement in the head center, it guides our attention, right? We can really use that energy and that physiologically arousing energy to direct our attention and guide our attention towards what interests us, towards what we want to know about, towards what we want to experience. And if we haven't developed the ability to relax with our nervous system, then when we start to get excited, what's going to happen is that fear will come in and become the overwhelming and dominant emotion that we perceive. And that will feel like too much for our system, and we'll begin to shut it down. And so, you know, these properties of the head center that are so exquisitely attuned to our world, they can get dulled down when we are when we don't have the capacity to stay with our excitement, and when our excitement automatically flips into fear, we actually, our body goes, actually shuts down energy to our cognitive, to our frontal lobes, where we can do all the sophisticated things that human beings can do, and really just kind of focuses on our basic functions so that we can survive. And so this process of learning to be calm in our body is important for every single Enneagram type, but particularly for the types in the head center, so that the faculties that they've been given can function.
Well, speaking of that, with really learning to be calm, the nervous system and in the body, Peter, you brought in with each of the types some of the ways that they patterned in the heart center and in the body center. So are there any sort of common somatic patterns for the head types?
Well, the common somatic pattern is that energy rises to the head. And when the defenses get a hold of that, then it's like leaving the heart or even leaving the body. Of course, we still have a heart in our body. We're just not in contact with it. So for head types, being grounded in the body, finding ways to work with the body, being grounded in the body through exercise, through yoga or tai chi, or through just simple breathing practices, really opens up the connection to the ground, and that in itself creates more safety and security. So that's having the resource of the body, and the ability to access the body. Sometimes in a calm way, sometimes in an exciting way, but to be able to be in touch with the resource of the body, that's a great antidote for fear. And it opens up possibilities for thinking more clearly, and also being in touch with the heart center, because it's safer. You've got that resource there. So for all the head types, and there's also something about active and receptive practice. Now, many head types, 5, 6, and 7s, are very skillful with the body. They've engaged in sports or martial arts, and in fact, they can be even teachers and leaders in that area. And that's great, but there's an other side to being in the body, which has to do with receptive practice, which is not the doing, it's just the being and allowing and the deepening. And that's also very important. And it can be challenging,
Can you say a little bit more about that, Peter? So give, what would be some examples of receptive practices that would be good, especially for head types?
Well, let's say working with the breath. Like, there are specific breath practices, And some of them are very much on the active side. For example, there's a calming breath. If we breathe deep breaths into our belly for 30 seconds or 60 seconds, that will actually affect our physiology, our heart rate, and everything else. So, and that's a great active practice. I'm actually directing my breath to be deeper and more down in my belly center. The receptive breath practice is simply following the breath. And it's, I guess we would say in some meditation traditions, that's the basic approach. It's following the breath. It's not doing, it's allowing. Because too much doing can kind of recreate the type structure or lead to, you know, tension in the body or whatever. I mean, so the receptive practice in terms of breathing is just following and being with whatever is there. And that also will shift our internal state with time.
So, Julie, it seems like with both of you, you've been describing the capacity for, of course, awakeness and awareness. So the head center, all types, gives us this capacity for self-observation. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, as Peter was talking about in the beginning about the head center in general, this can be an amazing gift, but it can also be used to disembody and to kind of detach us. But when we really do embodied self-observation, why is this such a great building block for personal and spiritual growth?
Well, you know, one of the most important principles of the Enneagram or theories of the Enneagram is that most of us spend most of our time really not being aware of what's actually going on inside of us, what's actually happening in our bodies, in our hearts, in our minds. And what I always tell my clients is that if there's something that you're not aware of, if it's operating so far in the background of yourself that you're not aware of it, there's really nothing you can do about it. You know, that structure just keeps showing up habitually and you think it's who you are. And so a fundamental skill for any person in the Enneagram, but that sort of derives from the head center, is of learning to observe myself, learning to see myself more clearly, with kindness, with compassion, and non-judgmentally. Right, and so this step of being able, you know, as you're listening through the summit and hearing about all these different patterns, you know, you may have reactions to them. You may think like, well, I don't do that, or that sounds fantastic, or that sounds awful. And you know, the way this work really gets applied to yourself individually is to actually be able to start cultivating what's called the witness in many traditions, this ability to see myself from a non-judgmental perspective. And, you know, almost to sort of, sometimes I tell people to, like, think of yourself like you're a scientist of yourself and, like, oh, what is Julie doing now? Like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, she's doing this, she's doing that. And so when we can cultivate the willingness and the ability to observe ourselves, now all of a sudden we have a completely different territory where we have choice about whether we want to continue in some of these habits and these structures or whether we want to cultivate the skills to grow ourselves more deeply.
Wonderful. So, Peter, one thing that occurs to me about the head types is that, you know, of course, we who have worked with the Enneagram for so long, develop a deep appreciation for every type and really see the beauty and just the differentiated orientation rather than really seeing anything as a problem. But I know when people first are learning about the Enneagram, one way that they've been frustrated sometimes by head types that they'll begin to have some languaging for is that they'll feel, for instance, like fives are sort of maybe cold and withdrawn, you know, and sixes are anxious and sevens are kind of flighty. And of course, we know that these are just different orientations, and there's ways that you can build better relationships with each type. So we only have a few minutes left, but it would be fascinating if you might share something about how we can build better relationships with the three head center types.
Yeah, well, it's a great question, Jessica, and certainly important for those of us who are not head types, because we don't always understand what's going on. You know, so why are the fives being withdrawn? Are they really interested? Well, the Enneagram helps us to understand, yes, there's somebody there, and yeah, the patterns can get in the way, but we can find ways. There are specific ways to create more rapport with each of the nine types. And so let's say for fives, we want to approach them carefully, slowly, thoughtfully, give them room. Don't just jump into their space. Knock on the door first, call ahead. Give them a time to, you know, register our approach. At another level, we can invite them to come forward and connect with us, not only in their minds, but also in their hearts. With sixes, of course, we have to understand their need to kind of challenge us with questions at times and not take it so personally. You know, it's like when they say, well, no, that's not going to work. Actually, that's not their final position. They just need to throw up all of the considerations and what we need to plan ahead for. And if we can, you know, kind of join them in that. It's like you don't say to a type six, don't worry, you know, everything's fine. That doesn't work. You say, oh, okay, I get that you're concerned here. Let's talk about it. Let's figure out a way to handle this. And then that really opens up a lot of space. And with sevens, you know, we want to kind of join them in having fun and appreciate their stories, their positive ideas. You know, it's not like they're going to do all those positive ideas and plans. They just enjoy having all the possibilities. So not to worry if we get like, oh, wow, we could never do all of that. But just say, well, that's a great idea, you know, and not get in the way. And at the same time, you know, we can invite them to kind of encourage their sobriety. You know, it's easy for sevens to become intoxicated with whatever it is. I'm not just talking about alcohol here. I'm talking about, you know, the wonderful ideas or the wonderful possibilities or the wonderful new places or the wonderful new people. And so, you know, at a closer in level with type 7, we can say, hey, let's take a little more time here, or let's go a little more slowly, or let's get more down and support them in staying more grounded and balancing their good ideas with common sense. Mm. And also to be there with them when they begin to feel their pain. That's huge.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. So often people don't think sevens really have pain. They see, but it's really, that's an incredible defense mechanism on their part. And the real seven heart is so engaged in life that they really actually do feel the suffering of the world rather acutely. So one of the deep qualities, of course, of the head center in general is clarity and wakefulness, and I feel like both of you have just been so clear. It's been wonderful to offer people the insights that you have. And it's on this session, I just want to mention that you are going to be able to listen to this session for 48 to 72 hours after the session for free, but the Shift Network is offering an upgrade package where if you, for a very limited cost, you can get all 40 sessions, and you just go to EnneagramGlobalSummit/upgrade, and you can look at that. And they add a lot of bonuses if you buy the upgrade package, which means that you can download all the sessions for a lifetime. And one of them happens to be with Julie. And Julie, I was wondering if you could just say in 30 seconds, what's this offering that you and John Lukovich have made as a bonus?
Sure. Through New York Enneagram, we've been taking a deep look at the instinctual drives. And how they are such a fundamental part of forming our personality. And so the bonus that you'll be getting if you upgrade is that you'll get an introduction to this new way of looking at the instinctual drives as biological drives within us that have intelligence. And you'll also get an introduction to the self-preservation drive, which is our most basic drive, the kind of the drive for life to live and to be planted in an environment that is nourishing and developing. So I think it's a really illuminating new approach to thinking about the instincts and how you can work with them for your development.
Thank you so much. So that's Enneagram Global Summit/upgrade. Well, Peter, thank you so much for the comprehensive way of looking at the head types through all three centers. And Julie, thank you so much, amongst other things, Peter, that you did. And Julie, thank you so much for wonderful metaphors that you gave for the capacities of the head center with each type. And I just really want to thank you for the wonderful contribution that you have made, both of you, to this summit.
Thank you, Jessica.
Yeah, thanks, Jessica. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us for the Enneagram Global Summit, brought to you by the Shift Network. To add this powerful collection of teachings to your personal library, visit enneagramglobalsummit.com/upgrade. To join our global community of people awakening to their divine humanity and taking inspired action, visit theshiftnetwork.com. Thank you again for gathering with us and for sharing this empowering path with your friends and family.